Hello, I'm Catherine O'Fallon, the Executive Director of the Marine Research Hub, leading efforts to advance ocean solutions and innovation in Florida and beyond. By 2030, the global ocean economy is projected to reach $3 trillion and 40 million jobs. And Florida, surrounded by water, is uniquely positioned to lead the way with marine solutions with a global impact. At the Marine Research Hub, we connect stakeholders, elevate oceanographic research, and commercialize marketable solutions that drive investment opportunities, create sustainable jobs, and ultimately protect our marine and coastal environments. Founded in 2017, the Marine Research Hub bridges the gap between scientific discovery and real-world application. Through collaboration between researchers, entrepreneurs, policymakers, and industry leaders, we accelerate commercialization, investment, and ecosystem building, creating lasting impact for our oceans and coastal communities. We are just beginning to make waves, and the potential is limitless. Join us as we fuel the blue economy through innovation, sustainability, and strategic investment from Florida to the entire world. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Blue Economy Podcast. My name is Catherine O'Fallon, your host, the Executive Director of the Marine Research Hub. Really happy for you to join us as we dive in to more adventures in the blue economy and how we are building the solutions that are going to create jobs, build business, but ultimately tackle some of our greatest challenges in the marine and coastal environments. And today I'm really excited to have one of my favorite people with us, who I would love to say I've known for a long time, but I haven't really known all that long, maybe about 10 years or so now, but it feels like we've known each other a long time. I'm happy to have Jessica Harvey, the CEO of Guy Harvey Foundation, with us today. And we're really going to dive into the blue economy and how education and awareness is such a huge part of building up this ecosystem that we have in South Florida and beyond. So, Jess, I'm so happy that you can join me today. I feel like we've been, like we said, it's been a long time coming for us to just sit down and catch up a little bit.
100%. And it's so, like, I see you at all the different events, whether it's marine science awareness, career awareness, trade shows, boat shows. And so it's like nice to have to talk about those things, and so great to see you.
Great to see you too. I know you've been traveling all over the place.
Yeah.
And we're going to get into that in a second. Mm-hmm. But before we kind of dive into what you're doing right now, I kind of want to do a little back track.
Sure.
We met, like I said, almost 10 years ago. I think it was virtually, maybe even around COVID time. So maybe not even 10 years. Yeah, it's been shorter.
Yeah. Well, like you say, I feel like it's been 10, but like time like blurs so much. I know that you've known my colleague Greg for longer.
Yeah.
And that's because part of the reason that is that I just only recently moved to the state.
Yes.
Full time. Before I was traveling from Cayman, and the US would be like a stopping point in terms of certain projects or going on to other countries. And so it was more fleeting in those times. And now it's been...
Now it's growing more and more.
Yeah.
We met really when I was in my former educator days. I don't like to say former because I still feel like I'm educating, mm-hmm. but just in a different capacity. Mm-hmm. But with New River Middle School, we met. We were working on a lot of curriculum things. Mm-hmm. And then I think the first time we met in person was actually at a teacher workshop that the foundation or when we met and spent a little bit more time together. Yes. I remember us sitting there painting, mm-hmm. and I was feeling very inadequate sitting next to you painting. And then you were like, I don't know what I'm doing. I said, Spurs said something. And I was like, okay, she's my girl.
We're on the same 100%. I think that was with Valerie Gaynor.
Yeah. Up in Martin County.
Yes.
At their environmental center. I think that was one of the first teacher workshops that the foundation had put together. Now you guys are doing a whole bunch of teacher workshops. So we've known each other in the curriculum and kind of creating marine education for a while. But I kind of want to talk about how you, I mean, obviously your dad, Guy Harvey, it kind of happens that you just fall into it. But really, let's talk about how you found yourself in this space, because it's not always sort of, you know, the path that you're going to stick and kind of follow your dad a little bit in kind of a loose way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, how did you find yourself coming into this position, and, you know, how did it all start?
Well, I mean, this is actually a great background, an example of how this all started. Mm-hmm. We basically grew up in a very artistic classroom. Mm-hmm. And so I mean, scenes like this were everywhere, and we would always have an opportunity for Dad to share what he'd learned on every expedition. And so my fascination with wildlife started at a very young age. And now I've always known that I wanted to do something with wildlife. To be honest, my first thought was becoming a vet.
Oh.
So and part of the reason was I wanted to be my grandfather's equine vet because he bred racehorses in Jamaica. And I was like at 5 years old telling him, Grandpa, you're not going to have to pay another vet bill because I'm going to be your vet when I get older and grown. So, yeah, we were always outdoors and we were shown at an early age how to fish responsibly. And, you know, diving, we started diving at 10. I didn't fully appreciate where that was going to take me until I was in university.
Uh-huh.
The veterinary goal kind of fell by the wayside because I didn't meet the standards needed for vet school. Oh. But I knew that I needed to take zoology if I wanted to have that option down the road anyway. So that's what I did. And I didn't intend to take marine science specifically because I did not really want to be known under Dad's shadow all the time.
Yeah.
And I felt like he got that realm down. This was originally more interested in terrestrial biology.
Okay.
So I did 4 years at University of Edinburgh, and which was awesome. And then I came home to the Cayman Islands. We'd moved from Jamaica when I was 9 to Cayman. And the one opportunity came up that was relevant to my degree was to work for the Department of Environment. And they just opened an opportunity to work in their terrestrial research division.
Okay.
So I thought, okay, I was thinking to go somewhere else in the world, like be a game ranger in South Africa or go and do some photography in Botswana and Kenya and those places.
Yeah.
And so when this opportunity came up, I thought, well, I'd be stupid not to apply for it. And I did. I never thought of myself working for government at the time, but it was some of the best experiences that I had, especially supporting conservation, because we know, conservation to be effective takes mm-hmm. multiple stakeholders, and governments have a very important role in that because they are the ones that set the policy. They are the ones that manage the natural resources. They rely on people to help provide data.
Yep.
And it's a wonderful career opportunity. So I did that for 3.5 years working in the terrestrial division. And I worked with plants, biodiversity, worked on land crabs and iguanas and everything
terrestrial.
Everything terrestrial. But I always had my toe in the water, literally, because I was diving all the time. I would help on some of Dad's expeditions, and we did the southern stingray census.
Yeah, for the Caymans.
Yes,
which you just came back from.
Yes.
Recently. Yeah. So you were always kind of had a little, like you said, a toe in the water.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and the more I've learned, it's so connected anyway. Like the what happens on land does not happen in isolation of what happens on sea and vice versa. So over time, it's been a wonderful learning curve. And when my dad's personal assistant left to pursue a PhD a while ago, Dad approached me and said, would you consider coming to now work for the foundation? And so I thought about it. And at the time, I was learning Spanish, trying to build up my Spanish in Costa Rica, and thought, you know what? Like, how often do you get an opportunity mm-hmm. to work with your dad? And I thought, you know, as a mentor and as a person that is in the health to be able to teach and do fun things, like I don't want to live with regret of not doing that. Mm-hmm. So that's really how I jumped in, and I became the project manager for the Guy Harvey Foundation branch in Cayman.
Oh.
And before I started working in the States.
Yeah, before you stepped into kind of taking over overseeing the whole foundation. Mm-hmm. So that's incredible, because I guess I, you know, did not realize that you kind of were like, I don't want to be in that space as much. I want to kind of create my own name. But I think you are creating your own stamp on the foundation as it really has grown over the last couple of years, and putting, kind of leaving your mark in that space. And let's talk a little bit about the foundation and what you guys have been up to, and how it's evolved. One of the first things I remember was like the Hammerhead Nation with yes. Guy Harvey and the foundation. And it was, but it's evolved a bit and I really love where it's at. So tell a little bit more about what you guys are working on right now with the foundation.
Right now we have a lot of different programs in place. We've expanded massively our education division, which has been wonderful. So to give, I guess, a little bit of backward context, Dad started a collaboration with Nova Southeastern University in 1999. And that collaboration exists today. It's a fantastic relationship. And the idea was that when Dad being a scientist first,
yes.
right? So he did his PhD in marine and fisheries management. And when he stepped away from being a professor and wanted to take on being an artist full time, he always wanted to support
the research.
Yeah. And so when he went to NSU and met Dr. Mahmood Shivji and the President Hanbury at the time,
yep.
they formed the Guy Harvey Research Institute. So as you know, research being very expensive activity.
Yeah.
And there's and it's very hard to, everyone is fundraising or requiring some extra help or subsidy.
Always looking for grants and always looking, needing money. Because like you said, it's an expensive endeavor, especially out on the water.
Right.
People don't realize all the logistics that go into collecting more data, especially shark and ray and different marine organism data.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And it's weather changes and to get the boat and the equipment and fight all the elements on top of getting what you need, tough. So, but a GHRI, as you say, has done so many wonderful things. They've published over 170 peer-reviewed published articles, which is a huge impact to the scientific community in terms of discovery, in terms of management, in terms of understanding the natural history of some of these animals, even to many scientific discoveries, whether it relates to species discoveries or fraudulent fish forensics, all sorts of things. And we were it was wonderful to be a part of that. But part of the problem was that some of the projects were being held up because of lack of funding.
Mm-hmm.
Dad then decided, let's set up a foundation to help support that. And so the foundation started in 2008. And so a lot of the funds that we did were on collaborative research supporting mm-hmm. billfish. As you can see,
yeah,
built for it. Yeah, big passion of Dad's, but shark research as yeah. well,
huge.
And so the that was the main goal in the sense that these animals are super important not only for the ocean health but also for the ocean economy.
Yeah,
but part of that realization down the road was, or later on was, we need to tell this story.
Yeah,
and Dad was very good at that. Dad loved to be a documentarian. Like, he's writing in his diary every day. He is filming when he can.
I have some great, great films, like documentaries, some really good ones that I've, have been used over the years in a lot of classrooms, including my own.
I was going to say, because when you were at New River School, one of the things that we talked about was the resources that were provided.
Yeah.
And you would also come to the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show and bring your kids to.
Oh, yeah. They still go. And your dad still signs every single one of their shirts. I was like, you do realize what you're doing right now. You have 50 kids. It's okay. All the people who are standing, he's like, it's okay.
Oh.
I'll take care of them. It was always so great. But yes, the education part has really grown. The idea is that, doing this great research at the Guy Harvey Research Institute with NSU also needed a platform to share yes. with the general public.
Exactly.
Not just the scientific community.
Exactly. Because research in silos does not help anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But not everyone's going to understand the scientific paper, right? So how do you communicate to the general public so that they know what's out there, they know what's going on, and develop a care for the environment that they so depend on and understand why, when, what elements they do? And that's when we invested a lot in the documentaries, in all sorts of educational resources, which has been great. But we realized we needed to do more, and especially when COVID hit,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you can, like, your experience, because were you a teacher still at New River?
I was a magnet coordinator right. during COVID time, but I remember us working on like various curriculum. We were creating like the little, the little trunks and the travel things, yes. talking about how that was going to work. But yeah, during COVID, it was kind of that moment, I think, for a lot of people, and how to reshape education a little bit and how to make it more, you know, utilize the computer to kind of pull people into it.
Right.
And I think that's where you guys really kind of started to just like, okay, there's this vast amount of opportunity,
yeah.
most space.
100%. And what it allowed us to do was break the barrier. I mean, we'd always known that art and science went together, right, as a teaching tool. And oftentimes in school, that was always separated. And if you were to drop something, most often it's the arts.
Yes.
So annoying. It's so, because it's,
unfortunately,
it is. And it's part of it is that you're dropping a creative outlet that is so needed in today's complex world.
Yeah.
And so that was the unique thing that we brought from an educational resource standpoint, was that we were relating the art and the science together,
yep.
so that you had a different perspective and a better understanding of what some of these animals did when you can't see them.
Yeah.
You can't go to an aquarium to see billfish, but you could talk about art pieces and use that as your portal into their world.
Mm-hmm.
And people gravitated towards that. It was a positive, hopeful thing. And it's built. We're so grateful for everyone who's participated in building that with us. So now we have some fantastic programs. The Conservation Education Training Program was launched last year. And that, to your point, was helping provide teachers an opportunity to see, not only have access to more resources, but to help support them through the process. Because during COVID, a lot of teachers got burnt out, and then that provided gaps in educational in educational staff. And so then teachers who weren't necessarily trained to in science or marine science or whatever, they were like, well, where do I start?
Yeah.
So the hope is, I mean, you have been a wonderful role model in that, because you've had that training, you've had that passion to be able to help not only support teachers, but your kids. But there's so many more schools that need that. So the hope was that we could provide that opportunity for them and provide an outlet for them to not be so scared of exploring the outdoors.
Yeah.
Is that, do you find that in your, I mean, in terms of field trips, et cetera, like how often do people...
Oh, so I think field trips are one of the best ways to get engaged in the environment. But sometimes the kids would go on a field trip and I'm like, you do realize we're snorkeling today, right? Like right. we're going in the water. Like you're not sitting on the boat. No, you're getting in the water. Some of them would get nervous about it for sure. Even though it's where they lived, they wanted to be able to experience it, even if they were afraid of it. I think sometimes they still wanted to experience it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them just don't have that mm-hmm. opportunity unless they go with their school.
Right.
And they don't necessarily have the chance to go with their school if there's not a willing administration or teacher who's willing to kind of take that on. Because it is a huge, you know, responsibility and extra work mm-hmm. for planning field trips and excursions. But I think that's where, you know, even you don't necessarily have to always get in the field to really immerse them in and show them how, and then to get that experience and that passion and understanding. And I think that's where you guys also come in with some really supportive resources for teachers. I think so many times people have always worried about the kids getting the stuff.
Yeah.
Well, as an educator, I know that if you get to the kid, well, they're going to be gone in a couple of years.
Right.
So you've got to get the teacher who's going to be able to continue to basically create that excitement every single year. And so it's going to hit that year of kids, the next year of kids, the next year and the next year. And that's where I think what the resources that you guys are providing is just really valuable. And it's also not scary for teachers who are not Marine people. I used to work, you know, with all of my teachers who were non-Marine, and they would always be like, well, you know, trying to incorporate math or literature, social studies into marine science. They're like, we don't know how to do that. I said, you don't need to know how to do that. We're going to help give you the tools, and we're going to tie it to your standards and curriculum, because everything ties together under marine. And then you utilize art as your way to do that. So that's where the STEAM comes in.
Yes.
But exactly. I think you guys have really kind of honed that space of really putting it towards the teachers. How is it going to be impactful for them? Mm-hmm. And then kind of giving them some fun tools to do it with and some swag. You know, teachers love swag just as much as kids love swag.
Yeah, for sure.
And things that are going to get their kids excited and get them. And then once they start feeling more comfortable with the content and the information, then they're going to be like, I want to do more. And that's where they're then going to be like, I want to do a field trip. I want to get my kids wet. Yeah, to get them in the water. I want to get them kayaking, canoeing, get them out in their backyard so that they'll appreciate what is right here.
Yeah.
And I love that you guys have really built that up and really strengthened that. And I know we've even talked about, you know, how to get more career experience and connect that blue economy side of it. Because this is an ecosystem. Like we cannot do this in silos. Unfortunately, that has been a lot of silos, and it's not been intentional. It's just been that people are very focused on what they're doing. But like you said earlier, bringing in policy and government and the business community into this, academics and education. And that's the goal with the Marine Research Hub, is we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're working with our partners who are doing it really well. So Guy Harvey Foundation is doing it really well in that education and kind of getting out the message. Now, how can we get more of this message to educate and then move into solutions? That's the big piece. So let's kind of like dive into that a little bit more. And we'll probably come back to more some of the resources that you guys have as well.
Sure.
But how do you see conservation kind of overlapping into this new technology and innovation space?
Oh man, there's so much opportunity there. Mm-hmm. I think that the amount of tech that is required to do from a monitoring standpoint, right, is how are we getting the data that is going to help us be able to understand what is happening, the dynamics of the ecosystems that we're talking about. That technology changes depending on your scientific question. And there's different elements that we have to battle as the scientific community to be able to get that data in a reasonable way. But also it takes time. But yeah, depending on what you're looking at, some of them can look in at a short-term time period, but something like the marlins and sharks and longer-lived animals, you have to study those animals for a much longer period of time before you can kind of grab any kind of data that would suggest any kind of trends.
Yeah.
And also the sample size has to be big.
Yep.
So the development and the technology and tagging and tracking and with satellites and data gathering, I mean, AI is going to be...
Please starting to make some great changes and positive. I mean, so many people were even just less than a year ago were like afraid of AI. Look at how much it's changed. But even just talking about AI in terms of the positive things that are coming out of it, analyzing data at a quicker speed, utilizing cameras to identify fish as they're coming on board dealing with bycatch in different areas. But yeah, I think in just under just about a year or so, I think the use of AI has shifted a lot of that scientific data for sure. And it's going to continue.
Yeah,
to shift it
as it should.
Yeah,
and, you know, and it's going to be up to us to steer it in the right direction, right?
For sure.
As you said, a lot of people are fearful of it, and even including myself, because it's evolving at a fast pace, right? Mm-hmm. But in some ways, you consider it like how people used to look at sharks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the more educated you are about a shark, the less fearful you are of them, the more curiosity you have towards learning about them. And you realize they're not scary animals. You know, they are to be respected.
Yeah.
They have evolved over millions of years to be where they are. And the more, so in terms of looking at that and from an AI perspective, like the more we learn about it, the less fearful we need to be. We do have a need to steer
in the right, the positive direction and be, but, you know, monitor and things. But yeah,
it can be helpful.
It can be so helpful.
So in terms of that tech, it's great. In terms of the reach to society, I think the platforms that we have now, the internet access and things, the access that people have to information has grown so much in the last few decades. I mean, when you talk to mom, she's just like, I can't take it. It's too much. I can't keep up. But but one of the things is that people have a lot better access to information than they ever had before. I mean, this is a podcast.
Yeah, perfect example.
Exactly. So it's exciting that people can, you know, find information about a topic that they love and really dig in. And one of the things, as you talked about, I think, which is really important is partnerships, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because from we as a foundation recognize, and I think, I mean, me personally also recognize that we need to have a lot of champions for sustainable change. But that doesn't mean I'm expecting that everyone listens to me, per se, or listens to the foundation. We're there to provide information that we can.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to the viewer, the user, the listener to digest that information and go and seek other sources of information to see if what we're saying or what other folks are saying are true. And from a marine careers perspective, that's super, super important. So when we're talking about technology as well in the sustainability space, you know, that's to me an even bigger opportunity when we're talking about ocean economy, because we're not just talking about direct interactions with the ocean. We're talking about businesses that can have better ways of monitoring their sustainable practices and not being better ocean stewards just by having a better understanding of their daily practices. And technology has been a huge help in that effort.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing I would say is that we as a society, as we think about our progression in this, is that we shouldn't be demonizing people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if nobody's perfect, right, when it comes to making changes. And we have to recognize that traditions and things that have been passed down for generations take time to, you know, it's not just about being taught, oh, you should, you know, the straw, you know, plastic straws, et cetera. I mean, that's just one example.
Yeah.
But, you know, yes, if there are better ways of changing habits that are more sustainable and you're become aware of them, great. But it is going to take encouragement, not demonizing folks to be able to do that. I mean, of course, you have other folks that are bad actors and we should be on top of those folks. But we're all in this together. We all have to work together. And I think that we will reach a more sustainable future the more we're willing to work together as a team versus trying to do our own thing and be over competing and being over like, you're doing that wrong, I'm doing this right. And, you know,
and trying to take claim for different things.
Yeah.
But also, like you said, it's government and different, you know, the municipalities, county, the cities, everyone, they're the ones who make the policy. They're the ones with regulatory things. But if they don't have the data, the education, how are they going to make the right decisions for the entire community in terms of what do we need in terms of being sustainable? And so it does require everybody working together and not just having things done in silos. You know, going to conferences, you see it probably a lot. You're in a space where, okay, I'm speaking to I'm preaching to the choir of sorts, you know, I'm the scientific community and that's it.
Yeah.
And so we want to make sure there are more people in the audience from all those different sectors so that we can actually, you know, drive that change and drive that education. And I think when you say also about the kind of the demonizing or, you know, people thinking that they can only do so much, mm-hmm. I think that's also an important piece that we want to make sure that students realize and teachers mm-hmm. realize that you don't have to do everything.
Yeah.
We can't do everything.
Right.
But you can do something and not expect somebody else to just do it. It's like, well, someone else will do that. Well, if you do your part and you do your part, think of the multiplying, you know, the multiplying yeah. effect. Exactly. And I think that's an important piece that you guys are trying to instill in the education materials as well, is that you aren't expected to do everything.
Right.
But if you do a little bit goes a long way. Fine. And then also realize that civic responsibility and that ability to share your knowledge. Don't just keep it. Keep it to yourself.
Right. And that's the best way we learn is just the talking about it. Like we can digest. Someone was saying to me, I think it was a communications training. His name slips my mind.
But
it'll come to you.
Yeah. But we always normally say knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. But what is missing, the piece, applied knowledge. Is power. And that's what I think both research Marine Research Hub and Guy Harvey Foundation are trying to do is showcase, you know, if you want to take a Marine career in there's a lot of options for you mm-hmm. to do so. And for me, you know, it's so exciting to see, and we talked about, you know, one point of communities in terms of teachers and kids, but there's all sorts of informal educators. There are parents who are homeschooling their kids. There's the general, you know, families, public. I mean, all of those folks need to have help in terms of resource access and education. Yeah. And so when you're talking about Marine careers, there's not enough being done or haven't been up until recently.
Yeah.
Of what is even possible for someone to be part of, you know, I mean, and that's, I think the first part of it is that you can get excited of being in this field, but just as much as there is on land, there is almost even more opportunity to work with the marine environment in a really fun way that connects us all very similarly. And so we are super excited to help with that. And we're starting this Marine career series mm-hmm. to be able to showcase some of those things, provide a point of inspiration so that folks can learn more about what is out there. And, you know, Marine Research Hub does that too in terms of creating awareness of the different industries that provide tech, provide jobs, provide data, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's exciting. People are gravitating towards it. People want to learn more about it. It's just, yeah, I'm so excited.
I think you said it right. It's inspiring. I think that was one of the reasons why I stepped into the role that I'm in now is because, you know, we talk about the marine space and a lot of it does boil down to back to kind of the challenges and the problems that we have. I always like to reframe it as challenges because with challenges comes opportunity and solution.
Yeah.
Whereas problems seem like it's just as heavy,
right.
Heavy, something that can't be necessarily fixed.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the reasons why I wanted to step into the space is to basically show that you could, you know, solve these challenges with solution-based companies and solutions that are going to create more jobs in the space while tackling some of these great challenges that we have. And that's where students, like you said, they need to be inspired. Like we need to show them, educate them about, and that's what you guys are doing, about the ecosystems and the environment and how it's all connected. And then they start to see companies and people that are doing these things. And they're like, I can do that. I never thought about a plastic problem and then looking at seaweed as an alternative to, you know, seaweed, biodegradable straws that are made out of seaweed as an alternative to the plastic straws. I mean, we're always trying to find more sustainable ways. Just because something is there doesn't mean that we can't improve upon it to make it, you know, a better solution. And I think that's where, you know, bringing in this Marine Career Series is great. Mm-hmm. Having that base of ecosystem education and now how everything is really tied. Like, you can't do research without a boat captain. You can't do research without an engineer who's going to fix that boat. You know, you need that data person, that computer science person. You as, you know, the Sky Harbor Foundation is a business. It's a nonprofit, but it's still a business. This Marine Research Hub is a nonprofit. I think, you know, people get confused about what nonprofits are, but we're still a business that we have to have bookkeeping. We have to have marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
We have to have all of these jobs that are connected to the space. And I think that's one of the unique roles that, you know, as an educator, we have that breadth of opportunity to show that it's not just one area anymore.
Right.
And everything's connected. And when going back also to just businesses and organizations looking more at how they can be more sustainable. You know, you have your business and you have your path and your product that you might be, but how can you look at your whole process of being more sustainable?
Right.
You know, you can find ways. Everyone can do a little bit and do their part. And I think that's also, you guys partner with Brightmark.
Yeah.
And doing some great things. So talk a little bit about that partnership a little bit.
Brightmark have been fantastic partners. They're one of many education partners that we have. And what's great about Brightmark is that their company is able to recycle any plastic.
Yeah.
It is really amazing. But they have a strong sense of responsibility to not just be a business. They want to be a role model. And they've provided support for creating curriculum as it relates or
as it's tied to what they're doing with the recycling.
Correct. So educational resources about plastic to help better understand what it is that we're looking for, why cleanups are super important, what options there are to be able to help deal with that kind of waste, but also to look at waste as an opportunity and build on that entrepreneurship as well, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So we've been... Bob Powell is fantastic. We've done some, he actually came and did some coral research, coral restoration with iCare and Force Blue.
Oh my God.
Some great stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have so many, it's amazing what you guys have been doing and the partnerships and the small impacts that not everybody sees all the time. Ron, you really, it's just there's so much going on. And, you know, your dad just kind of started his love of marine, his love of art, tie them together and was like, I'm a storyteller, I'm an educator. Mm-hmm. And then building out the foundation and you kind of stepping into this role, even maybe, you know, it took a little while, but I think you always knew that you probably would end up this way. But I think you're definitely, you know, bringing an amazing, new wealth of energy and excitement to it. And, you know, you're putting your own stamp on it.
I mean, it's honestly, I never feel like it's my stamp. I feel like it's a team stamp.
You know,
I would not be anywhere without my team. Like, they have been the capacity and certainly we've learned a lot along the way.
Yeah.
I mean, as you can appreciate, like running a nonprofit is not for the lighthearted.
Yeah.
You can accomplish so much. And I think that was one of the things that I was grateful to have had that opportunity in government to understand was that everyone has different challenges to work with. I mean, a lot of the biggest challenges we have in sometimes moving forward is internal teams in government not listening to each other, you know? And so from my perspective, you know, I think that one of the things that, and the reason I kind of tried to do a little separation from the foundation before I started was because I understand that respect needs to be earned. It's not given. And so I didn't want to come in with the understanding of like, oh, she's just Guy Harvey's daughter. Like, of course she's here. Like that's, you know, I wanted to be able to kind of prove it not only to myself, but to people I work with that this is going to be a worthwhile thing to dig in, invest, and grow.
Yep.
And that is turning 70 this year.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Doesn't look it. Doesn't look it. He's so busy.
There's more energy than I can even compel. But and that's the thing. It's like we have a mission now.
Yeah.
Like we want to really, not that we didn't before, but it is, we're challenging ourselves to see how can we reach folks as quickly as possible with these incredible educational resources.
Yeah.
We talked about there's in-person things,
yeah,
but the virtual side and the collaborative side, super, super important to provide that blended learning experience. The research, so that's how, you know, the education complements each other, is that the research that we learn, we put into these educational activities and resources. And so folks are having access to direct projects.
Yeah, that are happening. Currently, they can follow it. They can follow up more. They can actually see how the scientific data is impacting,
yeah,
you know, decisions, policy, education materials, all of that.
So, no.
Yeah.
And
it's awesome.
It's. I hope that there is more. I hope that more companies come on board in supporting the Marine Research Hub and supporting organizations like ourselves.
Yeah.
And to be curious about the amazing options. And I mean, Florida itself has a lot going for it. And there's a lot of investment that is coming into this space as ocean, into supporting the ocean economy. And so from a budding youth, you know, this, for lack of a better way of saying it, but like, it's an exciting time. We talk about it. Yes, there is difficulties, and yes, it is.
It's always going to be challenges.
But it honestly, like, it is, we are at a really amazing turning point. Mm-hmm. And we came back from a Panamanian summit, Nature Summit, where different dignitaries were coming and presenting. And I think what was interesting is that how the finance industry,
mm-hmm,
is coming
on board. Yeah.
Right? They're like, because before, and to this day, we're fighting on the fact that nature is looked as an asset to be extracted.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
And so from a technology standpoint, from a steam, like so many things, that there's so much there in terms of understanding the value of nature in place.
Yes. And how we can benefit by leaving it alone.
Yeah.
And it helps the environment. But also, I think to your point as well, is that nature also, not only extraction, but nature was also looked as a philanthropic,
yes,
before. Now it's an investment opportunity.
Yes.
You can make money and do good for the environment at the same time. And you can make money and doing good by just leaving some things alone or building back up what we kind of modified and stuff. So yeah, we can go into that like a whole,
yes,
I don't know how we're thing.
But the thing, yeah, is that to the point and the perspective of this,
yeah,
that there are a lot more opportunities that are coming,
yes,
to help, sure, support environmental sustainability activities on all levels across the globe. And the more that the investments come and the avenues are made available, the bigger the opportunities that people will have to be able to be creative, to be entrepreneurs, to be make incredible discoveries and bring us as a society closer together, while also relieving the guilt that a lot of us so have, in the sense of, man, we have so much we need to fix.
Yeah.
You know, but we're changing that.
And so getting there. It's little bits at a time. It's bits at a time. You can't take the whole chunk in a bite. You got to take a small bites at it.
Yeah.
I love everything that we've been talking about. And I feel like we could go on a whole bit longer going on, but we're going to be wrapping up here. So before we finish off, can you just kind of share, mm-hmm, where people can go, the website, more information about Guy Harvey Foundation, the teacher resources, all of that?
Sure. So if people visit guyharveyfoundation.org, great resource. There is a lot of, all the educational resources that are there are completely free. And there, so if you have any questions, there's an ability to reach out to us and say, hey, I'd like to learn more. I'd like to participate in a conservation education training program. There is ways in which you can get access to field trip grants, stipends, all sorts of things. As well, there is helping out with a specialty license plate is also a great way to learn more about some of the research that we're doing and support us. So if you also want to go onto ghritracking.org, you can see tracking
of all the tags and things that are happening with Nova Southeastern University. Yeah,
exactly. And so, and more is going to come.
Yep.
So it's, there's social media, Guy Harvey Ocean, and we'll be at different events. So please come and ask us questions, learn more. We want to, and the thing is, it's a two-way street, right?
Yeah.
This is not like, this is not an education out only. Like, we have learned so much, including from yourself, like, you know, the collections that we built back in 2020, like that has been used many times since its inception. And we're so grateful to everyone who's participated in that, because it is, everyone has different perspectives.
Yeah.
Different
looks, different age groups, different audience, you know, like you said, it's not just kids and students, it's general public, it's their family members. It's, you know, I feel like we have to educate everyone and find the way to get to everybody, you know, because they all learn it in a different way.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, thanks, Jess, so much for sitting down with me. I know, did you realize that we've like basically kind of gone for, oh my word, for a while today? I know, it's crazy. Well, thank you for joining us again for another episode of the Blue Economy Podcast. I really appreciate Jess joining me, and we hope to see you next time. So please like, share, and follow, and we'll see you as we dive into more about the Blue Economy in our next episode. Thank you so much.
If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.